Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon. Here we are, and welcome to a Monday installment of Connecting Faith. I always enjoy your company and appreciate you listening to Faith Radio. And today, we're going to take the entire hour to help us make the most of life, the life God has called us to. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about, we get to productivity eventually.
Yes.
So that's by the end of the hour. We should see, I think, a marked difference probably in your output. I think, Ryan, that'll be the challenge.
This is going to be an inspiring hour.
I think it will be. I'm really excited to welcome a new friend to the studio today, because we're going to talk about what it would be like to have a God-centered, gospel-oriented perspective that addresses the proper motivation to drive your productivity. You know, we know a lot about, you know, efficiency and effectiveness, and we hear a lot of those. And there, of course, there's a lot of great books out there. Think about maybe Stephen Covey's book, you know, The Habits of Highly Effective People and First Things First. But we want to talk about a new book that really brings the gospel to bear to this, really at the center of it. And the book is called What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. And I think all of us, probably even by this point on a Monday, realize that we're not going to get everything done that we wanted to get done. How's your list today?
You know, it's pretty good, but there definitely are places I wish I was getting more done.
Okay.
I would say that.
We'll find out why that is. We're looking forward to visiting with Matt Perman, who formerly served as the Senior Director of Strategy at Desiring God Ministries in Minneapolis and is a frequent speaker on the topics of leadership and productivity from a God-centered perspective. He has an MDiv from Southern Theological Seminary and a project management professional certification from the Project Management Institute, and he blogs regularly at whatsbestnext.com. And has written a brand new book. In fact, it just came out. It's so new that Amazon has actually run out of their first shipment. But tomorrow, they'll be there tomorrow. And we've got some copies to give away as well, which would be even better. What's Best Next? Matt Perman, welcome to Faith Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is something that, did it come out of you, your just sort of natural inclination to be more productive than all the people around you? Or I mean, is this a natural thing?
I definitely wouldn't say that I'm more productive than the people around me. I've always been interested in these things, but mainly my background is actually theological. And I have a seminary degree in biblical and theological studies. But after seminary, I started work at a ministry. And I was given these huge responsibilities to my plate, run the website, launch a nationwide radio program, and I found that simply knowing theology wasn't enough. I had to learn how to get things done. And I love that stuff, too.
Well, and the fact is that all of us, I think that's probably a passion for everybody, right? That's sort of a universal, right? We've just, our plates are more full than what we can handle.
Yeah, I agree with that. I found that this is something that all of us have to deal with every single day. So it is universally relevant, and that makes it all the more important that we think about it from a biblical point of view.
So I guess, how does a biblical point of view to productivity differ from maybe standard principles? I mean, we mentioned Neil Covey, and you can go online, there's seminars, there's books, there's tapes, everything. So what's unique about this?
Yep, yeah. The first thing that's unique about it is actually something you wouldn't expect. Taking a biblical perspective does not mean rejecting what the secular people are thinking. We do not reject sound common grace principles. There's a lot to learn from people like David Allen, who wrote the classic book, Getting Things Done, which is fantastic, and Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Those are fantastic books with a lot to learn from, and a Christian comes to those and sees them as good gifts of God's common grace. Like James 1:17 says, every good and perfect gift is from God. And that includes great tips from David Allen on how to get your email inbox to zero every day. But the thing is, there's more. Those books, as helpful as they are not able to show how these things connect to God. They aren't able to tie our productivity to ultimate purposes. And one of the things I'm trying to say is that matters immensely, because a lot of productivity books talk about doing what matters most, right? We all want to do what matters most. But if God exists, and he does, then God is what matters most. So we need to look to God in order to understand what productivity really is, because at the end of the day, he's the one that decides what is productive and what is not. And so what I try to say is, in order to understand what productive things really are, we can't leave God behind. Let's learn everything we can from David Allen and Stephen Covey, but then we got to go a step further and say, what are the things that God wants done?
So maybe that's the question. Does God care about our productivity?
It's a great question, because a lot of times as Christians, we think he doesn't. We think it's unspiritual. We think God only wants us to be reading the Bible or doing ministry work or volunteering at a soup kitchen. And all those things are very important. But what I seek to show is God also cares about the very practical, nitty-gritty details of our lives, including how we get things done. He cares greatly about it, because he created this world. He's the one who created this world where we end up with these long to-do lists with far more than we can get done in any day. God's the one who set that up. So he's not going to abandon us and say, oh, these things don't matter. Don't worry about tips for getting your to-do lists done. He cares immensely. And I mean, and he talks about this throughout the scriptures, like Proverbs 21:5, it says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance. So there is an affirmation of planning and diligence. God loves your to-do list. God loves your desk and wants you to know how to set it up well so it doesn't get in your way as you're trying to get things done and serve people.
I guess that's all part of stewardship. And then we always somehow think of stewardship as only about our treasure, but it really is about our time as well, too, and talents.
Man, absolutely. Yeah, I think sometimes we get a limited view of stewardship, that it's only about money, but it's really about all that we have. Like the parable of the talents. Jesus is there telling us we're to use every single thing he's given us for his glory and the advancement of his kingdom. So that includes not just our money, but also our skills, our gifts and abilities, and our time. And what we need to do is be maximum stewards of everything that the Lord has given us.
You know, we hear phrases like efficiency and effectiveness, and maybe it's good to just define some of those things. And productivity, I mean, what do we mean by those words?
Yeah. Was super important. Most of the time when we think of productivity, we think of efficiency, getting more things done faster. And certainly that's important, but that's not enough. That's actually the wrong definition of productivity. And the reason is, it doesn't matter how fast you're getting things done if you're getting the wrong things done in the first place. If I go to the store for a carton of milk, but come back with a jug of orange juice, it doesn't matter how fast I got there and back, because I got the wrong thing. I was efficient, but I wasn't effective. And one of the first things we need to realize and say is productivity is first about getting the right things done. And I would then argue that's actually the greatest type of efficiency, because if you focus on just everything that comes your way and try and speed up and go faster and faster and faster, you're never gonna feel like your list comes to an end. But if you say, well, wait, among all these options I have before me, what are the most important things to do? And you do those, a lot of the other stuff actually doesn't even need to be done.
Which is always kind of frustrating when you pause to think.
Yeah.
Sure. And don't look at me like that, Ryan, as I give you assignments to do. By the way, we're talking to Matt Perman today, who has written a brand new book that just came out called What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. And we'd love to have you join the conversation as well. You can call us at 877-93-FAITH. We do have three copies of this brand new book to give away, and you'll find it really a helpful tool in your understanding of productivity, maybe at a whole new level, and we're going to continue to talk a little bit more about it. And we'll get to some practical tips here by the end of the show as well. But if you'd like to join us, or you have a question about it, or as you listen in, feel free to give us a call at 877-933-2484. You do spend a good deal of the book, though, talking about, I mean, really helping us understand God's Purposes and Plans for Productivity. And you talk about something called GDP. Now, we think we know what that acronym is, but what does GDP mean to you?
Yeah, so that's an acronym for Gospel-Driven Productivity, and that's the system that I outline in this. And, you know, using GDP is intentional. I saw, hey, I could have called it Gospel-Centered Productivity, but I said, wait. If I call it Gospel-Driven Productivity, it can be GDP, and that is an intentional echo to gross domestic product, except with a difference. Gross domestic product is the measure of a nation's productivity in its economy, but it's merely a monetary measure. And I argue we need to think about productivity in much more than just monetary terms. This is not about a life of personal peace and affluence and maximizing the amount of money you earn. This is about being productive the way God defines it, and that's doing good for others. Money is not the success. So I'm tying into a common measure of productivity, but I'm saying we got to change that around a bit. And gospel-driven productivity is my method, because I do believe methods are important. It's much easier to remember things. So I bring everything together into a guiding principle for gospel-driven productivity, and that's love. Seeking the benefit of the other person first is actually the way to be most productive, and it's what the scriptures teach us to do. That's how to be productive in a way that glorifies God. And then I lay out four steps which fall into the acronym DARE. And just real quickly, it's define. You need to know your mission and values in life. And then architect. You can't just leave your mission and values at the level of intention. You have to weave them into the structure of your life through a flexible framework. So a basic template to your week. That's architect. But then we come to what we all encounter. We just have way too much to do and way too much going on. And that's why the third step is reduce. You got to get rid of the things that don't fit. And then the last step is execute. And that's where the rubber meets the road, where you're getting things done in the moment. And a lot of times we think of productivity just in terms of the execute step. But really, there's all these other things that need to go before it. Otherwise, you're going to be executing on the wrong things, or you're going to have way too much to execute on. So you need to have it in the proper worldview and framework. So that's why the whole DARE is important.
We're going to come back and talk about that underlying principle in a moment about love and related to that generosity and how that really drives everything. From a biblical perspective, to have gospel-driven productivity. We're talking today with Matt Perman, who is author of a new book called What's Best Next. Matt formerly served as the Senior Director of Strategy at Desiring God Ministries in Minneapolis, and has a theology degree and has written this fascinating new book with the practical helps. We've got some copies to give away. Love to have you join the conversation, or at least sign up for the book, at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. More with Matt Perman in a moment.
Are you struggling to keep up with your fitness plans for the new year? We want to help. Join us for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge as Susie Larson leads you down a six-week journey of faith and fitness. During these next few weeks, we'll focus on physical and spiritual steps to a healthier life as you commit to live fit. Sign up for free at myfaithradio.com. It's not too late to sign up for Commit to Live Fit 40-Day Challenge.
Antioch, Bethlehem, Colossae, and Derbe, we hear these cities mentioned in the Bible, but often we don't really know where they are and why geography is important in understanding the biblical narrative. On Monday's Faith Radio Mornings, we'll be joined by geographer Dr. Paul Wright. He's written The Rose, Then and Now Bible Maps with Biblical Background and Culture.
Then at 7:40, how can we become more missional Christians? Ken Hammond will join us to provide some biblical advice for becoming a more effective Christ follower. His book is called Sentness.
Join us for Tuesday's Faith Radio Mornings at 6 a.m.
Talking today about maximizing personal productivity, but more than that, we're talking about what God cares about and how we align with His plans and purposes. The question is, what do I want to do for God, but what does God want me to do? And for a believer, productivity is more than a set of skills. It requires a mindset and a worldview. That's what Mark Sanborn wrote on the back of Matt Perman's new book, Matt is, he's head of the Matt Perman Company. He consults with businesses and ministries about this very important topic about productivity, GDP, gospel-driven productivity. And we got some copies of What's Best Next to give away, and we'll happily take your call as well at 877-93-FAITH. Matt, you talked about that underlying principle, love and serving others. So let's just explain that a little bit more. What does that really look like?
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic question. So yeah, if we're going to let God define what's truly productive, since God is what matters most, we need to look not just actually at what he wants us to do, but how he wants us to do it. And what the scriptures teach is, and we all know this, right? What God wants from us is love. Jesus summed up all of his teaching and the Old Testament law in the command to love your neighbor as yourself. So I looked at that and said, well, if this is what God requires of us, then that's what it means to be productive, actually. And then I thought this through in terms of, well, how does this apply at work? Because oftentimes we don't think that love applies at work. We think it just applies in our personal lives or at the soup kitchen or on a mission trip to Africa. But what the scriptures actually teach is that love is to be the guiding principle for everything we do, including our work. And this means two main things. Number one, love is to be the motive in everything we do. We are to be motivated by the good of the other person, not first our own good. We are to seek the welfare of others. And as Christians, we are to live in this world to make a contribution and leave things better than we found them, to make people better off. And second, allowing love to be the guiding principle of your productivity means it becomes the criterion by which you decide what to do. Instead of saying, what will benefit me first, we say, well, what will benefit others? A lot of times there's this notion that in the world of work, the way to get ahead is to put yourself first, crush others, and step on people on your way to the top. And I want to argue that's not just ugly, it's unbiblical. What the scriptures teach is even in our work, we are to be nice, smart people. We are to be loving people, even at work. And what we actually find, interestingly, is not only do the scriptures teach you'll become most effective that way, but even the best business thinkers are beginning to realize that and show that from research.
Love and generosity. So how does I guess, doing good work it's not limited to ministry, right? I mean, this is doing good work really is the foundation.
That's right. A lot of times we think of good works. You know, Ephesians 2:10, it says the purpose of our lives is to do good works. Paul says we are created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. But a lot of times we have this very truncated and narrow view of good works. We think they are just rare and special things we do, like going to Africa on a missions trip. But in reality, the scriptures teach that good works are everything we do in faith. So you don't need to go to the soup kitchen even to do a good work. You don't even need to help an elderly woman across the street, though that's important to do, even though I'm yet to come across that in my life. But good works are not these things that just fall on our someday maybe list where we think, oh, maybe next month I'll be able to do a good work. Instead, the scriptures teach that good works are anything you do in faith, which means the activities of your everyday lives and the callings of your life are the arena in which you do good works. So that means it utterly transforms the way we think about all of life and the way we get things done. It means that even doing emails, when you're doing emails, you're doing good works. When you're going to meetings, you're doing good works. When you're making supper for the family, you're doing a good work. All day long in everything we do, we can be doing good works if we just do the things before us for the good of our neighbor and the glory of God.
So we're sitting at our desk with a pile of emails. We just have to get through them. But so our attitude is love and generosity. How does that actually maybe change how we respond to those emails?
Yeah, absolutely. Instead of, for example, seeing it as an overwhelming thing and just saying, man, I just want to get these emails done so I can get on to the next thing. Instead of having that type of mindset, which is a depleting, discouraging mindset, instead you can see those emails as an opportunity to do good for others and to bring benefit to people, as an opportunity to serve. And that brings great meaning to that task of getting through your emails. It makes it exciting, and it changes the way you'll do it. because of understanding these things, you're going to seek to be encouraging in your emails. You're going to seek to be on the lookout to find ways to help people rather than just pass their problems on to the next person. You're going to go about those emails with a new sense of energy and excitement, even because they're actually opportunities to serve others.
Matt, let's talk about some of the first step recommendations, because you spent some time in the book, and maybe before we get to the first step, I'm thinking that isn't there sort of a tendency when you pick up a book like this, the first half really is there's a lot of theology there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of sort of practical tips, and don't people kind of like, okay, yeah, I know, yeah, I should have first things first, but what are the tips? Do you deal with that? I mean, you get that response?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, there is this notion, especially on productivity, where we think, oh, just get me right to the tips. Yeah. Just, I'm busy, get me to the tips. And what I want to say is you'll actually be less productive and less effective if you just skip right to the tips, because productivity is more than just a set of practices and tips. It's also a worldview. You need to understand not only what you should be doing, but why you should be doing it. You also need to understand the theology of productivity so you really have a way of knowing what the best things to do are. The theology helps you bring a grid to your daily life to determine what really is most important to do. If you don't have that grid, your understanding of life and productivity based in scriptures and correct principles, you can have all the tips in the world, but you're going to be applying them to the wrong things in the wrong way. I mean, Sun Tzu, even the guy who wrote The Art of War, he gets quoted way too much in the business literature. But he did say correctly, tactics without strategy is the noise of defeat. So we need to care about strategy, and we need to care about guiding principles, because productivity is much more holistic than just the tips. But the tips do matter, and that's why the second half of the book is all about that.
Well, you talk about personal mission statements, and I want to talk maybe a little bit about that in line of understanding gospel-directed productivity. And I'm wondering, why do most mission statements fail, and how important is that as a foundation?
Yeah. A lot of people are skeptical of mission statements precisely because most mission statements fail. But there's a very simple reason for that. It's because most of the time when we're creating our life mission statement, we start with ourselves. There's a common exercise out there, for example, imagine your funeral and what you want other people to say about you, and then base your mission statement on that. But as Rick Warren points out, I did a lot of research for this book, and one of the books I really dove into actually was Rick Warren's Purpose-Driven Life. It's a very good book. And Rick Warren just points out, he says, frankly, that's a bad plan, because at the end of your life, it doesn't matter what other people say about you. What matters is what God says about you. And since we didn't create ourselves, we can't define our own purpose. God has already defined our purpose. So if our mission statement is actually going to work, we can't just come up with it ourselves or even do something which in many ways is noble, thinking about what we want other people to say about us. That's not going to the core. We need to go all the way up and say, since I didn't create myself, God did. I can't discover the purpose of my life through speculation or my own reflection. I need to look to what He has said about the purpose of life. And then when you anchor your life mission in what God Himself has said is the purpose of life, then your mission statement works.
So the chief end of man, to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever? I mean, can we get any more? I mean, can we get more specific than that? That seems a little nebulous.
Yeah, it can seem nebulous. I mean, if all you say is the purpose of my life is to glorify God, you can be left without some concrete practical guidance. You can be like, okay, what's that look like? And I've seen people, they've just had a scripture passage for their mission, you know, 1 Corinthians 10:31, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. That's great, but it's not getting detailed enough. God has stated the purpose of life in hundreds of different ways throughout the scripture, and it does boil down to glorify God by enjoying Him forever. Enjoying God and glorifying Him are not two separate things. We glorify God most by enjoying Him. But with our life mission, we got to get a little more concrete than just saying glorify God. And at the root is justice, mercy, and walking humbly with God. That's Micah 6:8. What does the Lord require of you? So He's telling us the ultimate purpose of life there. And He says to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
Talking to Matt Pruin today about the brand new book called What's Best Next, How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. looking forward to getting things done and want to get some important insight about productivity. This is a great resource. And Matt formerly served as Senior Director of Strategy at Desiring God Ministries and speaks frequently on the topics of leadership and productivity from a God-centered perspective. And he's consulting with business and ministries and joining us today on Connecting Faith. You can join us as well at 877-933-2484. Or if you want to drop us a note, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can send us an email. We'll take your questions and comments and talk more with Matt in just a moment. And the recommendations for the book, What's Best Next, How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done, several authors have written to Michael Hyatt, one of them, says he provides the know-how and the know-who we need to be faithful stewards of the gifts that we've been given. I like that. This is not just about know-how, but it's about know-who, understanding what it means to have gospel-driven productivity. GDP, when every time you hear that, those letters again, I hope you'll think about gospel-driven productivity. Matt Perman formerly served as Senior Director of Strategy at Desiring God Ministries in Minneapolis, frequent speaker on the topic of leadership and productivity from a God-centered perspective, and this is a brand-new book just out from Zondervan called What's Best Next. And we sort of talked a little bit more about the understanding the framework behind this. You talk a little bit about a roadmap for life, and I'm wondering if there's, before we get into maybe breaking down DARE, what are some of the areas that we really need to attend to?
Yeah, man, well, there's a lot, especially today. There's the amount of input we receive, that we all receive by email, text message, Twitter, Facebook. Text message, it reminds me a lot of passing notes in class in elementary school, except now you can get notes so-called, from anywhere in the world. I can sit down to try and get dialed in, focus, and I get a text message from Florida and another one from California. It's really hard to set aside the distractions. Now, I believe it's important. All this is important because it's about relationships. And we can't think of productivity just in terms of making widgets or getting concrete tasks done. Relationships are a part of productivity. So I don't believe in saying, I hate email, don't send me a text message. All of that matters. It's about building people up. But we do need to know how to segment things, so to speak, and stay focused when we really need to get dialed in.
So as you mentioned, just sort of highlighted, we want to unpack it a little bit more. I talked about the acronym DARE, Define, Architect, Reduce, and Execute. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about each of those. But I'm just wondering, is probably the area where we come up short, is that often in the reduce area? Is that sort of the place where we don't quite make it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the hardest right now. And for a lot of reasons that are good, a lot of us, we love our work, for example. So it's hard to say, no, I don't want to do this. And also, we do love people, and it's hard to say no, not just because we're afraid of offending the person, but because we really do want to help the person. But I give a four-step acronym to help us reduce it, and it spells DEAD. And at first, I didn't like that. I thought about changing the order so that you didn't bring this morbid idea into how to reduce. But then I thought, well, really, this is about killing the things that take you off path. So it does seem to make sense. And there's four things you can do to reduce that spell DEAD. The first is delegate. I don't believe delegation is about taking menial tasks that you don't value and just pushing them on other people. That's not respectful. Delegation is really about understanding your calling, identifying the things that are out of scope with what God has chiefly called you to do, and give those to other people. And you got to do that as much as you can. But being God-centered in our productivity has implications for how we delegate. It means you need to delegate in a way that empowers and affirms the other person rather than just seeing them as a tool. That's not biblical. People are not tools to get things done. People are to be respected and honored in everything we do, including how we get things done. So I talk about how to delegate in a way that's affirming and respectful and loving to the other person. And I talk about the difference between stewardship delegation and gopher delegation. Don't treat people like gophers. Go for this, go for that, do this. You got to treat them as stewards, as people that you give responsibility to. But anyway, delegate is the first thing to do there. And then second, you can just eliminate. get rid of the stuff that's not worth doing. Just axe it. Get rid of it. And then automate. There's some things you can put on automate. You know, some things that are just obvious that everyone does, basically, like automatic bill payment. You know, set that up. There are lots of other things you can automate too, as well. As much as possible, ask, is this something I can just turn into a routine? Can I have a machine do it or a computer do it? Or if not, you can create it as your own routine. I have like a set of monthly tasks I do, for example, and weekly tasks I do, and things that are recurring. I just slot them in there and I can kind of do them in a mindless way. I mean, even things like changing my furnace filter, I don't leave that to chance. I've got it in my task calendar. Basically, once every 3 months, maybe that's not often enough. Every Saturday morning, every 3 months, it comes up, change that, and I do it. So I don't got to think about it. And then the last one is defer. And that just means putting it off for the future. And I mentioned my task calendar. I use that to defer things a lot. Oh, I don't need to do this now. I can't forget about it, though. I'm going to put it on my task calendar for 3 weeks from now.
I did, when you're talking about automate, I noticed so that when you do your furnace filter, but you also do other similar tasks there too. So it's not just, well, this Saturday I can do the furnace filter, but next Saturday I can do this. But you just kind of, you collate them, get them all together, right?
So, absolutely. Batching is a helpful principle of productivity. So doing like things together. So along with that furnace filter, for example, is check the rock salt in my water softener. Now, first of all, I don't know why I live in Maple Grove. We have to have water softeners out there. I don't know why they don't just do that at the water plant. It would save me a lot of hassle and money. Like, so I hate buying this rock salt. It's in these 40-pound, you know, things. So I go to Target. Sometimes I will buy 15 at once. So I don't got to think about it for months and months.
You are in great shape, though, let me tell you.
Yeah,
I mean, it's making a difference.
That's exactly what does it.
It's your routine.
So, yeah, I batch like things together, so it's not just random.
Yeah. Well, we're talking, we kind of got ahead of ourselves. We're talking about DARE, and we've sort of touched on define, but I mean, it always kind of keeps coming back to define, doesn't it? I mean, no matter whether it's the architecture or structure or reducing or executing it, I mean, it all needs to go back there. Right?
It does, because productivity is about getting the right things done. That means you need to have a criteria for knowing what the right things are, and that's the define step. Know your mission, know your values. But there's actually a mistake we can go there. Values clarification was a major movement in time management, especially in the 90s, and that's great. But there actually is one flaw to it, and it's that you can have the wrong values. So that's why I keep emphasizing in the book, we need to go back not just what do we value, but what does God value? And the challenge and the key is to value what God values. Let God define and shape your values. So, and that's all in the define step. But it's about really valuing what God values, not just defining things for ourselves.
Let's talk about the A in DARE. The architect is basically you do have one of the ways to be productive is to have a structure, right?
Yeah, a structure is very important. It can be easy, like especially as Christians, we can fall into over spiritualization. I mean, one author said, Jesus doesn't care much about organizing. He cares only about passion for what's most important. Well, he does care most of all about passion for what's most important, which is God. But organizing also matters. We can't go about our lives with this nebulous ambiguity. We got to put things in a structure. Otherwise, we just get overwhelmed and lost. And that's what the architect step is about. Organize your life and most of all, that means have a basic template for your week. It's not helpful to have to create every week from scratch. Have some basic time slots for when you do your most important categories of tasks. Certainly don't try and schedule everything out. You'll never be able to fulfill that if you just try and script everything out. So leave lots of white space in your week for the unplanned and unexpected, but do have a basic routine.
So do you keep a to-do list, and I mean, do you sort of script that out?
I do. I do keep a to-do list. My tendency is always to overwhelm myself, and my to-do list gets very, very long. But I do keep a to-do list. It especially got hard for me to keep up my to-do list when I was writing this book, because writing is a task that requires long periods of time and concentration, and then I have this to-do list, and I really, especially in times when I feel overwhelmed and my to-do list is too long— the title of the book, What's Best Next, is helpful. It becomes a question because I say to myself, okay, there's way more on this list than I can actually do. So instead of trying to do everything, I need to say what's best on this list. What are the few things that are most important and will have the highest impact? And I do those and then have to be okay with not being able to do the rest.
I like the fact that in your architecture, you built the template, but there was, as you said, big spaces. So yes. It wasn't, in sort of little 15-minute increments, but there was a big space so that you knew that there were these kinds of tasks you'll do during this time.
Yep, absolutely. I think God has not wired us to be tightly controlled people. That it kills motivation, I've found. You can't get rid of structure altogether and say, oh, I'm just going to go off and follow my whims. That's not going to work. You got to have some structure, but you got to allow a lot of freedom. And that's also because of the fact that God is sovereign and we're not. So having white space in your calendar is a logical implication of the fact that I'm not Lord of my calendar. God has given us a measure of control, certainly, but he's Lord over what happens with my time. And so I'm going to acknowledge that and recognize, consequently, I can't script everything out, and I'm going to leave white space that really is a reflection of God's sovereignty.
Let's talk about the final in the acronym DARE. It's E for execute. I think it was Peter Drucker said, "Do first things first and one at a time." That's a great line.
Exactly, and that really hits the core principle here at execute. Stephen Covey did some research, and he said the common denominator of successful people is not intelligence or even hard work; it's the capacity to put first things first. And that's the key principle for productivity. And if there's one thing you want to remember in terms of the tips, it's exactly this. Effective executives and effective people in life in general put first things first and do one thing at a time. And the second part is just as important as first things first. I mean, well, first I'll say a word on that. Put first things first, not second things first. The second things, the less important things, should never be at the mercy of the most important things. But it's so easy for us to do the easiest thing first or the thing that feels most immediately rewarding first. But instead, we got to say, no. What's most important? I'm going to do that first. And then one thing at a time. If you try and do 20 things at once, you will splinter yourself and diffuse your energy and efforts and likely get none of those things done. But if you do one thing at a time, if you take one thing and you work on it all the way to completion and then move on to the next thing, you'll actually get far more done than if you try and do everything at the same time.
Yeah. Which is sort of counterintuitive. Somehow
it is. It is counterintuitive. And again, I think most people, they would hear me say that and say, well, yeah, of course we should do that. But it's really hard to do because it is counterintuitive, and especially in the moment, we face so many distractions. It's very, very tempting to splinter ourselves.
But now, you know, if we understand that God controls our calendar, those distractions could be divine appointments. So instead of an annoyance, how do we change our attitude when someone shows up at our door?
Amen. Exactly. In a lot of time management literature, people are viewed as interruptions. And there's almost this individual warrior approach mentality to productivity. Isolate yourself from people, set up barriers so people can't get to you, and then you'll be maximally productive. And that's not a biblical view of productivity. A biblical view of productivity values people and affirms relationships and says, look, people are not interruptions. People are made in the image of God. They are incredibly valuable. And so as C.S. Lewis said, he said it's easy to end up feeling like people are interruptions, but in my moments of greatest clarity, I realize that these so-called interruptions are my life. So we need to have, I think, a balanced perspective here. Certainly, we don't want to be continually interrupted, but we can't err on the other side by saying all interruptions are bad. They're not. They're opportunities to serve people, and they are the life that God is providentially bringing our way. So let's find out how to embrace them. In many ways,
if love and generosity are at the core, then that's going to make a difference in how we approach it.
Exactly. This person who is interrupting me is not someone to just get rid of as soon as I can. It's a person for whom I should set aside maybe my pre-planned schedule, really listen to, value, and not try and get rid of them as fast as possible, but really find out what they need and how I can serve them and make sure I serve them all the way and make sure that they don't feel like an interruption. Make sure they feel valued. And this, again, it goes back to love and how love is to affect all of our lives. We should make sure that people do feel valued, not just in our personal lives or at church, but in our work. We need to do our work in such a way that people come away from interactions with us encouraged and feeling valued because they really are valuable, because we're all made in the image of God. And the way actually that we treat other people, even at work, is really a reflection of what we think about God.
Insights, fascinating insights from Matt Perman today, author of the book, What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. It's brand new from Zondervan. And we're going to talk more with Matt in just a moment. Do have a couple of copies to give away. We'd love to have you join the conversation as well. Or if you'd like to just sign up for the book, it'll be a great resource for you. It's 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. We'll try and get your call in here. It won't be an interruption. You can call us or drop us a note at myfaithradio.com and then go to Connecting Faith for the email link there. More with Matt Perman in a moment.
It's not just information, it's transformation.
A lot of things have kind of gone on in the last year or so, the last few years actually. I just needed something different, just kind of was poking around and I found it. It's a reassurance that the Lord is there with me. Listening to the messages all day long, it brings peace to my day. Not only that, I mean, I've been educated. He's there all day, all the time.
Connecting faith to life every day. Thanks for listening to Faith Radio.
Hey friends, this is Susie Larson, and I'm inviting you to join us for our 40-day challenge, Commit to Live Fit, a journey of faith and fitness as we head into our Easter season. We just finished week one, where we focused on water. Be sure to drink 8 to 10 glasses of water per day and spend time drinking in the water of the Word. You can still sign up for the challenge at myfaithradio.com to receive the weekly email with tips and encouragement. Take the Lenten journey with us at myfaithradio.com/commit to live fit.
It's 48 past the hour. Talking today with Matt Perman, who's a business ministry consultant and author of the book "What's Best Next: How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done." In fact, it has flown off the shelves at Amazon. They'll get more in tomorrow. You can check it out there. Or Matt, maybe a website. Do you have a website? You
want yep, to... my website is whatsbestnext.com, and right. You'll find my blog there and other resources as well.
All right, and you're. Write regularly at whatsbestnext.com, so check that out for some great insight. Judy emails and says, I tend to get bogged down. Plans look good on paper, but after I've committed, they seem to expand and I get overwhelmed. Any tips for keeping balance?
Yeah, that is definitely a tough situation. I struggle with that as well. It's the issue of scope creep. So you have your plans and the objectives, and then, boom, there's way more to do. And some of that is the nature of the beast. We're all dealing with ambiguity, and there's some things you just can't know in advance. And sometimes maybe we haven't actually defined the scope on our plans to the extent that we ought to. So sometimes there are things we can do. Sometimes it's outside of our control. But what I find is important is, number one, build some margin into things. So take the plans you've come up with and expect them maybe to take about twice as long as you first think. That's a pretty good rule of thumb. And then number two, do make sure you define your objectives clearly. And as the work seems to expand, say to yourself, is this new work really in line with the objectives? And maybe sometimes it is, but maybe sometimes it isn't. And then be prepared to say no and to restrict and stay focused in on the objectives, because that's what's really most important. That's what's best next in that circumstance.
What's best next is a question we have to be asking ourselves regularly. I was interested, Matt, if does this have implications maybe globally, and maybe would missions strategies change with this sort of perspective in mind about what is, you know, God in terms of gospel-driven productivity? I mean, or is this just sort of a North American Western thing?
It's a fantastic question, because the cause of missions is very close to my heart. And I believe that as Christians, we are to care both about what's right in front of us, our jobs and our local communities, and God's global purposes. So when we define our lives and think in terms of what am I about, what's most important, God says you also need to care about solving large global problems and reaching the nations with the gospel. That is something God requires us to care about. And that's why it's actually central to how I conceive of productivity. And it does so at least in a couple ways. Number one, again, we do have to affirm the importance of right where we're at. You don't need to go over to Africa to serve God. You can be making chicken sandwiches at Chick-fil-A and be serving God in that if you do it for the good of others and the glory of God. But also, when you get home from making chicken sandwiches at Chick-fil-A at the end of the day, I'm sorry to say, but your work's not done. Because God also calls you to care about solving large global problems and advancing the gospel among the nations. Now, how do you do that, though? Because you come home, you're tired, you're busy, you got another to-do list to do in your personal life. Well, that's one reason time management matters. When you learn how to manage your time, you know how to make a place for addressing the global advancement of the gospel. But also now today, because of technology, we're in a position where we have more tools than ever before to serve the advancement of the gospel right from our living rooms. For example, you can log on to Kiva and make a loan to an entrepreneur in the developing world to help them lift themselves out of poverty. There are all these creative, innovative, amazing ways we can be involved now because of technology in meeting global needs and advancing the gospel. So one of the exhortations I make in this book is, as I say, use some of the time that you save to be involved in God's global purposes. It is an amazing thing, and it's a far more exciting life. There's another book on productivity which has a lot of helpful tips. It's called The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and I love that book. But he puts productivity purposes towards the wrong end. It's all about, as the subtitle of the book shows, join the new rich. Live anywhere, do whatever you want, and join the new rich. Travel the world, live the life of your own choosing. And what I want to say is, his tips are great, but really, if we look at what God has to say about productivity, we are not to use the time we save to join the new rich, but to serve others and advance God's purposes. And I would also say, though, that's a far more exciting life. This is a better use of the 4-hour work week to take the time we save and our increased ability to get things done and use those to further God's global purposes and serve others. That's the most exciting life. That is the life of greatest fulfillment and meaning and purpose, and what an opportunity we now have because of technology to be involved in those things in creative, engaging, interesting ways more than ever before.
Thinking how often we talk about, you know, we're so often tied up in so much debt that we don't have the ability to give. It's probably the same way, too, is that we're tied up in our time. We don't have the ability to really serve like we could.
Yeah, exactly. We're just overwhelmed with so many things. And if we can understand how to manage our time better, we can carve out more time in order to be doing some of these things instead of saying, well, one day I'll get to that when I get caught up. Look, you're not going to get caught up in that sense. You got to learn these principles now and start doing them, and then you'll be able to carve out time for these things.
Talking about gospel-driven productivity. Let's take a quick call from Karen in Lana Lakes. Karen, thanks for your call. You're on with Matt Perman. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Neil, and it's good to hear your voice. Matt, I just had the neat opportunity to get a new position at work, working with our disabilities people at the airport for Delta Airlines, and how I've got so many great ideas. I work through that without blowing myself up.
Work getting through all the good ideas.
Yeah. That's a all great right. question. First of all, it's awesome that you have so many good ideas. Okay, so first affirming that's amazing, and that's one of the key sources of how you will be effective in your work. All these ideas that you're having, that is excellent. Now, obviously, you have way more ideas than you can possibly do. So a couple thoughts there on how to narrow down and choose. Number one, ask what's the purpose of my job? Why am I on the payroll? And try and summarize, have like a mission statement for your job. Try and summarize it in one sentence. And of course, that's based on what I think it was Delta Airlines you said, how they have envisioned the job. But there's also always latitude that we have within our jobs as well, where we are able to bring some initiative to the job and define it in a certain way. And that's where especially I'd say take God's purposes into account and what he has to say and come up with like a mission statement for your job. And then look at all the ideas that you have from that grid and say, let's say you have 30 ideas that you've listed, and I would say list them out, write them down. Don't just leave them in your head. Actually write them down. And then after you've listed them, look at them and say, okay, I've got 30 ideas here, or maybe 300. Say, what are the three that would potentially have the biggest impact? And there's always going to be just a few that will have far more impact than even, say, the other 80. And you use the mission for your job to identify what those vital few are. So it's really about brainstorming the ideas and then saying, okay, which of these are best next?
What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms, the Way You Get Things Done. You'll find a great resource with the book. And in fact, you've got some resources online too. Just say a word about what's available at whatsbestnext.com.
Yeah, there's far more I wanted to say than what fit in the book. So I created an online toolkit for the book. And that's at my website at whatsbestnext.com. And you'll see a link right there. Or you could just go right to whatsbestnext.com/toolkit. And there's some chapters that didn't fit in the book. There's some checklists, a daily productivity checklist, a weekly planning checklist, how to plan your week. I reduce it to three simple steps and a whole bunch of other resources as well.
So do you have a favorite tool or technology, or do you use a notepad? I mean, just never go without a notepad, or what works for you?
Never go without a capture tool. Okay. I like the Moleskine journals. Okay. Those are really, there's just something that they have a good design. And there's something about the design that actually makes me want to use them more. So design is an important component, actually, in helping us be more productive. But in terms of software, I prefer OmniFocus. It's for Mac users. And that's where I keep my to-do lists and project lists. And yeah, there's an iPhone version. And it's really pretty cool. For Windows users, I actually, back when I used a Windows computer, I liked Microsoft Outlook. I found it to have a good task management system.
Well, there's a lot more we could talk about, but it's been a productive hour, I think, which was the goal, right? Is to talk about productivity from a gospel perspective. How the gospel transforms the way you get things done. That's the subtitle of the new book, What's Best Next? Check out Matt Perman's writing regularly as he blogs at whatsbestnext.com. Matt, blessings to you. Thanks for coming by today and encouraging us.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having me.
If you missed a part of today's broadcast, you'll want to pick up the podcast and probably pass it on, share it with a friend. And you can go to myfaithradio.com and then click on Connecting Faith to see the archive of our shows. And, of course, you can always listen again tonight, 10 o'clock. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.